This is a Pinball News production.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm glad Bob gave me the opportunity to come and speak to you. Excuse me. It's going to be Kevin.
We were
trying to get Kevin to come here. He wasn't aware that the schedule was rearranged. Obviously, that was him. I started in Valley back in 1979. A fellow that you are all familiar with, Norm Clark, brought me into the industry. And we started with another fellow you may have heard of, Ward Pemberton, who did a game called Fathom. And we both started back at Valley as technicians. And that was probably one of the best experiences I had in the industry, is starting with games, learning how they're built from the ground up. And I always found that to be the best part of it. Working with your hands, taking a concept and making it into a product. And as technicians, we did everything with the game, building prototype parts, making the plastics by hand, all the ramps and the scoops for the ball play. We'd test the playability of the games, hand wire all the play fields and tweak them until it found final approval, and then we'd go through the art process. And then when Kevin comes, he'll speak to you more about that. So it was from there that after a couple years of being a technician, Norm gave us the opportunity to become junior game designers. And the first project I did was Medusa. And, you know, at this time, it was an interesting time to be creating games. We had the advent of video games coming on, and pinball was really competing with the video games. We're trying to make a better product, something that would have more playability, and as a consequence, you get a game like this, which weighs probably 100 pounds. This thing is one heavy game. And with this, we started out with a couple new features that we didn't have on pinballs before. And you start with the shooter lane. We have rollover buttons and a timing feature. So the player had to time not only the release of the plunger, but also the speed of the ball. And if you did that, you lit up your bonus, and it affected the play of your spinner, the points that you were awarded with your spinner in the middle. A couple other things we did with this was with the flippers, we tried to create a visual image, and Kevin will probably tell you more about that. They had a lot of red Lexan on this game. And visually, it was a very, very appealing piece. We had Lexan flippers, and you don't see them on the games very often because the material itself became brittle and it would break. So I still have one here, but underneath the flippers, we had inserts, and each flipper was lit. So as you flip, the actual flipper would light up and would turn off. So it was very visually appealing. We had another feature. This is something that Norm Clark developed. And in the game, it's the Shields of the Gods post. But in the engineering department, we call it the Panic post. And it was basically a slingshot mechanism with a molded post on it. And it was also illuminated, too. It was made out of red Lexan again. And so you had an extra button on the flipper, flipper button on the cabinet, the right side of the cabinet. And you would build up points, and it would give you a number of panic post moves. They were all just, there's my red Lexan again. And the amount of usage you had with the panic post was on a display in the center of the play field. I don't know if you can see that. So then we had several features, a timing feature. Now, one of these had a negative scoring feature, which I'm not sure was a very good idea at the time, taking points away from a person. But it was all displayed in the center display. Another feature we had was the zipper flippers, which they hadn't been used in a number of years. And if you come up afterwards, you can see what an interesting mechanism it is. I don't know if it'll move them in. But one of the images we tried to do at the time, a lot of the games were going into split level play fields. So if I talk to somebody and you mention Medusa, they'll always say, "Oh, that was a two-level game," but we tried to keep it all on one level to make it easier for manufacturing, and so it does have the look of a two-level play field. Oh, there you go. Yeah. So when you go up to the top, you could trap the ball here, and that was also a time feature that was displayed here. You could see when you're displayed, how much time you had until the flippers opened up again. Another thing we did was we created this light bar. It's a bonus feature. Each one of these is a segment. I believe there's 20 of them. And you would build up your bonus. And each one, when you reached a flashing level, there I think it was 5 and then maybe the 10th level, that would be your bonus. One thing, though, behind the 7-bank drop target, we have a 7-bank memory drop target. Again, quite a mechanical mechanism. Behind here, we have 3 targets. There are 2 green targets and 1 red. And the green would advance and double your bonus. But if you hit the red target, it would start subtracting your bonus. And that's a feature, I don't know that was as popular. When you start taking people's points away, that doesn't go over well. But this light bar was visually very attractive. And I think there was some confusion, though, at the time, is what the points were. I thought we should have had graphics to show what values you were getting. Because you would see the flashing lights, and I don't know if it was explained well. Now, the 7-bank memory, let me see if I can put that back. The 7-bank memory was also, it had a time feature on this also. So you would hit, it came up in segments. You would start with one target, you'd build up, and then you'd get your full 7-bank. So you worked in increments all the way up. I think one of the things that when Kevin comes, he'll probably say about this game is he liked the open feel of it. It gave him a lot of room for graphics. The artist will. If we had a lot of mechanical features, if you look at this, this is all open area and all down here. It really gave him an opportunity to show off his artwork. Some of the things we did too on the Thumper Bumper caps, which this one, I'm missing a couple. I haven't restored this yet. Difficult to find. We had individually stamped Thumper Bumper caps for each one, and these are rare. You still don't see these very often. If I ever get these in some Lexan flippers, I can restore this to its original state.
Anybody have anything here they want to donate to the cause?
Yeah, if you know where I can get them, I'll give you my card afterwards. That's it. Well, one of the things, at this time, we're all trying to do something different and creative with the outlinks. And something I did here was using mini posts with rubbers, and you could deflect the ball in and out. It gave you an extra chance and created a little anxiety. If you lose it, a lot of times if you just let the ball roll, you would go in. A lot of times you nudge it and force it out. But there was no outlanes per se. Like, we used to have scoops and that would actually catch the ball and roll it in. This would bounce around, and you would have the control of bouncing it in or out. I don't know what else we had. Does anybody have any questions? Yes.
Two questions. One, the six digit display in the middle. I know a lot of Valley Designs, the engineering department, they had a requirement to use these in a creative way to use them up. Is that the case with that?
Actually, it was, because at the time they went to seven digit displays, and there was a surplus of six digits, displays, and we had plenty of those, and we did look for ways to use them in the games. And I think this was also used in the game after this. Yes, it was used in Vector. Well, this was a multi-ball game, I believe. The multi-ball feature, at the time, Williams was doing a lot of multi-ball games. And that was, we were competing with them. And there was an element that people found attractive. And so we tried to incorporate in some of our games, too. But it was still up to the designer, engineers, and programming and that. But there was a competition because there were two big companies, two creative companies, and you're really competing with them. And that I think put a lot of creative juices flowing at each company. We're all trying to outdo each other. You're trying to come up with a new concept, something that hasn't been done. And, so we're always, a good friendly competition, I would say. Yes?
So with all the extra things you put in the game, the footer, the rollovers, and the shooter, like, how self-assault was it to the upper management to make something that had all this stuff?
Well, I know in manufacturing they weren't real happy. This is one heavy game. And we did have an incident where, now, if you remember, a lot of the play fields, we had rails on the sides of the cabinets, and you would slide the game in and out. Well, this playfield didn't have a lot of room on it, so we used up all the real estate on the sides of the game, and we put a hinge. We put hooks on the sides. You could see these later, and the playfield hinged up and down. But it was very heavy, and there were times when the playfield could, inadvertently come down. And, it did weigh a lot. So, for a manufacturing point of view, I think we're putting more and more on the games, and it does make it more difficult to manufacture. It does make it more, a more costly product. So you look at it, and it's visually, you say, oh, it's nice, but if it was difficult, it makes it more difficult. The more you put on, the more difficult it is for manufacturing, the more cabling, the more cost that goes into it. So it kind of escalated, too, at the time. I think one of the things we do with pinballs is as we put more and more on them, I know if you're an operator, it makes it difficult to repair them. And that was a consideration. But then again, we were competing with other companies who were doing more and more. So it was an escalating fact. Any questions? Yes.
Was the theme of the game known when it was being designed, and where did the theme come from?
I believe the theme came from Kevin O'Connor, and they would present to management, they would present concepts, and he would do art sketches. And I have one of the brochures that up here you can read that shows how it developed, and it really comes from the artist's conception of a game. And this did have voice on this game. And I don't know if anybody remembers the commercials, Hubert the Harris Lion, for I believe it was the Harris Bank, years ago. And it was a deep, resonating voice. And he was the guy who did those commercials, was the man who did the voices for this game, too. There's another question.
Yes. I got my translucent foot. I don't know if he still has it. I never knew that the kicker was translucent.
Yes, yeah, the kicker in the middle. And that was also, there was a light that underneath that. We put a light near that, and it did glow, too, when you flip.
I had another question, too, and it might be a question for Kevin, but my Medusa has the earlier, more controversial back glass. Did you guys get a call one day saying put more clothes on her?
Actually, that's exactly what happened. I have the same back glass, and it's a little more graphic, let's just say that. You know, and I believe there was 250, the first prototype run had that glass, and then they did touch it up after that. And Kevin would know the exact reasons, but I think there were some complaints that it was a little too revealing. And you know, we did change the artwork after that for the production, the full production run. Oh, yes?
Were there any features or play toys or something like that on the field that were in the prototype and that produced the production?
Of this game? I don't believe so. I did a game, I followed this up with a game that... we only made two of them, a game called Mysterium. And that game, we were moving to the facility that was Midway Manufacturing, Valley Midway, and the pinball division combined with them, and this game was never made. And there were two samples, and I believe somebody has the artwork for it, but I don't believe the play fields exist anymore. Oh, here's Kevin, too. There was another question?
How many laps are on that playfield?
That's a good question. we did use the bayonet. They used to use all the bayonet sockets, and we went to the push-in sockets, which we tested heavily. And now, the exact count, I'm not sure. John may remember. But an interesting story with these is we were approached by General Motors, and they were interested in testing light bulbs. These are the same light bulbs that you'd use in automobiles and dashboards. And you need to have a good life expectancy. So we developed a test room with all thumper bumpers on the play field. And I think we had 7 different games going at one time. And we'd record the number of impacts each bulb would take. And we were reporting back to GM, and Norm Clark, I remember, would have meetings with people, representatives of General Motors. So we actually were doing testing for General Motors and our light bulbs. And if you were ever in this room, that was one of my responsibilities, to go in this room and make sure that these games were working. And you have 15 thumper bumpers on 7 different play fields all going off at one time, right? So if my hearing's a little off, you can understand why. Yeah.
Kevin, do you want to?
This is Kevin O'Connor. He is the artist on the project.
Are you other things to say, Wally? Medusa is the result of putting two guys together who went out to lunch maybe too long. No, just kidding. This happened at the time of the Ray Harryhausen movies, Clash of the Titans, but long before that, I was reading Greek mythology, so if you look at the play field, you'll see Zeus up at the top, his women. This was Perseus, this is the winged messenger, whatever his name is.
Hermes.
What else do we have here?
I did have
King Neptune.
Neptune's cool.
Yeah, the Gorgon. Of course, it was said if you looked upon the Gorgon without sunglasses on, you'd turn to stone. And that's what basically what we have happen.
Which part did they cover up? Close the back area, what they cover up on the back top.
Oh, is this? Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were asking which parts. No, Kevin, you remember that they did two versions, didn't they, of the art? And was after the first prototype run, I believe? Or was something a couple hundred? Well,
I'm not sure that they ever released any glass, but there wasn't the PG rated version. And they felt something needed to be covered up in her crotch area and also in her chest area. So maybe some prototypes, but
I have this original glass.
Okay.
So I think they did.
Well, he has an original glass.
Yeah. But they did.
Well, I don't know. Maybe there was 20 of them or something.
Yeah, I forgot the number, but there weren't very many. And then they did. From
requests from above. Anyway, this is an acrylic painting on illustration board. It's done fairly quickly. It's a combination of just regular traditional painting and airbrush also. Something at the time that we hadn't done much of was that we screened like an LED red on here. And we didn't really know how that was going to turn out. That was something pretty new that they would have a display. And I don't know how many other games had that.
Yeah, for Christ's sake. Excuse me.
Yeah. I have the brochure that explains the.
Now, Kevin, is it true that you're going to donate this artwork to the charity auctions and everything?
That's not true. I don't know how many of these float around. How many people here have one of these?
That brochure was also a two-page one. A lot of them, they went to one page and they opened that one.
I'll read the Medusa legend to you. Once a beautiful young mortal, Medusa fell in love with Poseidon, god of the sea. The two unwisely retired to the temple of Athena, only to be found there by the goddess, incurring her wrath. Athena transformed Medusa into a horrible Gorgon, a monster with glaring eyes and serpent hair. So cursed was she, her very glance turned men to stone. Shunned by every living thing, Medusa isolated herself from mankind, but Perseus, well protected by gifts from the gods, was able to slay her using Hermes' sword and Athena's mirror-like shield. Perseus cut off Medusa's head and witnessed the birth of Poseidon's children. Pegasus, the winged horse, and the warrior Chrysaor from Medusa's headless body. Perseus then presented Medusa's head to Athena, who fastened it to her shield. Bally recreates this exciting tale of Greek mythology with Medusa, the pinball from Mount Olympus, comes Medusa's fabulous new features. Metamorphic drop targets, synchronized plunger skill shot. Okay. Illuminated top arch bonus. We still got that?
Yeah.
And we still got that? Okay. Extended play, last ball, extra ball digital feature play field, time locked zipper flippers. Eliminated panic post and flippers. Subtract bonus target.
One of the features that we had too was the a time extended play. We call it extended play. And what you do is build up extra time. And it's a form of an extra ball feature. But it was at the end of the game, you would have this amount of time left in it. And that was also on this display here. One of the things I showed them earlier, Kevin, is the stamped. Yeah, and that was, I forget how they did this, the process, hot stamp. So all these, now you notice these have fallen off. The older flip thumper bumpers had screwed on tops, and these were clipped in, and you can see what happened to mine. They broke, the clips broke, and as a consequence, the rings. And a lot of it was from the vibration of the flippers and the thumper bumpers here. So I still have one left.
Yeah, if you'd like.
Secret agent Rob Burke found something here that has not been shown to human eyes. So Kevin and Wall have both said that they're going to allow him to show it. So, Ollie, you want to hold this thing? This is your design, I assume?
Yeah, well, Kevin and I.
Here's a game that they created for development in hopes of selling it to Bally or whoever.
We had a presentation with Williams at the time.
It was called Jolly Roger. So here's some pictures of something I've never seen before, guys.
There was one prototype made.
You can talk while I'll show them.
Oh, okay.
Yes, Kevin and I were working independently of the industry at the time, and Kevin had the concept of developing a game that looked like you're on the deck of a pirate ship, and that was the theme, and if you see it, it does look like a pirate ship. I handmade cannons, so when you're on the deck of the ship, you had cannons, you know, going out the sides. And each time you hit one of the regular round targets, you would light the cannons, and so it visually looked like you're shooting cannons off the side of the deck. And then Kevin did artwork that looked like stairs, you're climbing up the stairs, and it was a split level play field with multiple shots, flippers on the top. And this game did evolve, and what was finally manufactured by when I was working at Alvin Gottlieb, we took a lot of the concepts of this game and incorporated into game Pistol Poker. So even though it was never made under the name Jolly Roger, it still was manufactured under Pistol Poker, and there was many changes, but the basic concept and the visual look of the game were the same. So, and I still have, I don't know if Kevin knows this, I still have his original painting of this concept, the Jolly Roger pinball backlash.
And will that go at the charity auction?
If I can find it. There was a question? Yeah, and it was Mike. Well, I believe Mike may have it. Yeah. Yeah, it was. Now, a lot of it was done by hand in my garage. So I had to hand make the rails, and I did a form of making vacuum forms. But, you know, again, I had to do it by hand. So it was a very workable piece, but then again, it wasn't manufacturing quality. But Mike Pasek did have that.
What's the production number?
I believe we made 3,500. I think it was 3,500 Medusas were made. And it was the same time of, we had a trio of games. What was it? Centaur, Medusa, and Fathom all came out, you know, back to back. So it was actually a great time to be in the business and designing. You know, I always thought that the opportunity to, I've only done a few games. You know, I'm not one of the most prolific or well-known, but I always thought it was a great opportunity to have this experience and say, hey, I did it. You know, it was really fun. And to go through the whole process of developing a product from concept all the way through was really a great experience.
Yeah.
What was your background before you designed?
How I got into the business, I was a teacher, and I was, Norm Clark was, I hope you don't mind me telling him, Norm, Norm was my baseball coach when I was a kid, and I was doing some work. I was always pretty handy, and I drew up some, I was making some custom-made furniture, and I drew up some plans, and I was making this, and Norm saw it, and he said, you know, you'd be pretty good in this business. I said, you know, what's that? And he said, the pinball business. And then that's where I got my opportunity. But he started me at the bottom. You know, I was a low man on the totem pole, learned from the ground up. And that experience, you know, knowing from the very beginning of a project all the way through, knowing the cabling, wiring my own play fields, and all that has always been a valuable experience to have. And it's stuff I still use today. Because you look at a project and you know it not from just a conceptual side, but also how are we going to make this thing work? Are there any other questions?
Steve had asked me the year that this was made, and I had put it in 1980. This brochure says 1981 on the back of it.
I was just tracking the years myself.
I think one thing that Wally omitted from this Jolly Roger thing is, I think he met with one of the underlings of Ken Fidesma at the time.
I believe so, yeah.
And he made the comment to Wally, he goes, so you guys are pirates, huh? He goes, well, I'm a pirate too. You know, how much do you want for this thing? And, of course, it was never made, so obviously they had turned us down. But I thought it was, funny that only a few months later they made Black Rose after that. Kind of had the feel of a deck of a pirate ship.
Do you remember, now we didn't do any programming for this game, so I took an existing game, the Jolly Roger game I'm talking about, and so I had to use a program that existed and then simulate things, so I had to rewire it so when you hit this target, you know, like I said, the cannons would go off. And we didn't have a programmer, so the sounds, Kevin and I put together our own sounds. We taped, I believe it was an Errol Flynn movie?
Yeah.
The
Seahawk.
Was it?
The Seahawk.
Oh, yeah. So we taped that, and we incorporated different cuts from the movie, put a tape player inside the game, and just before they came, I said, excuse me just a second, I hit the tape player, and that was our version of having sounds in the game.
Any other questions?
Just take questions.
In any of your artwork, are they generic people, or did you pattern them after any friends, relatives?
In any of my artwork?
Yeah, in general.
Any gods and goddesses you knew personally?
Oh, I knew one red-haired goddess, and she wound up on the back glass of Strikes and Spares.
Was her name?
All right, she was a combination of two red. Other than that, let's see. I think Margaret Hudson wound up and took her picture to put it on Time Machine and painted her picture on there. A friend of Joe's wound up on Time Machine too. He had me. I forget. It was just a friend of Joe Camico's who's like hanging onto the back of that car on Time Machine. And that's the guy, I believe, now who has the painting. I didn't keep much artwork from the days I was with Joe. So most of them, I have all my ballet stuff and what current Stern stuff I've painted.
For those who that don't know Kevin, he also did the artwork for Kiss, so I'm sure there's a lot of people who enjoy that artwork. And in fact, he told me he took it to a Kiss convention.
Yeah.
I took it to a Kiss convention. I also made posters, which I still have some left, and I'm going to be selling those probably up in front.
Are you at the autograph session, by the way?
Yeah. So I'll be able to
autograph session.
Can
you make it?
I'm going out of town after
okay.
this. Yeah.
That's right. But anyways, it'll be a chance for you guys to get some special things autographed for you.
I had my picture on one game, a likeness on that pistol poker we did with that Alvin G, and I was on one of the wanted posts. So for cattle wrestling.
Back here.
Paul, can you talk about some of the other games you did?
I only did a few games. Like I said, the game Mysterion was a follow-up to this Medusa, and that product wasn't made. We only made two samples, but they did do an art glass. This was also using some of the ideas of this game Medusa with the timing feature and negative scoring, and we had a stream of lights coming down, which would be your bonus lights, and it was used as a clock, and it would flicker down, and that was your time. And in that time frame, you had to hit a certain target, you know, whichever one was flashing. You would have to hit that to stop the clock from, and then if you didn't hit that target, it would start detracting from your bonus, which is why I say I don't know about the negative scoring feature. We had one of our vendors in, and they were playing the game, and he had, you know, I don't know, a couple million points, and he's playing, and he looks up, and he sees it on a scroll right down. So that didn't go over very well. But then I had the opportunity working with Alvin G. I did a couple games, Mystery Castle. I worked with Mike Gottlieb on that game, and I did a game, I always said the best game that was never made, Slam and Jam. And that was the last game. We had it ready for production and going to a show, convention, and got the company closed at that time. So that never made full production either. And then, like I said, Pistol Poker and... Yeah, and I worked with Data East. I was... when Data East started, Joe Camico had me work as an independent contractor, and I did a lot of the cabling for Joe, and I think the first three, four games that they made, you know, I worked with them, but I wasn't employed by them, I was independent.
So the negative scoring, was there a way that you could get just cross the replay threshold and then get some negative scoring and cross it again and get some more replays, or did you have a rule against that, a way to catch that?
Yeah, I don't remember if we really got that far. And once a guy saw a score go down to zero, I think that was the end of negative scoring. When I also worked at Capcom and did a couple novelty games for them, but Fortune Falls and another roll-down game that was bought out by Data East, and they made it into the Austin Powers novelty game. And those were, so, you know, I've only had the experience of doing, say, five pinballs.
There's a question in the back here.
Yeah, how many months did you have to design and get produced to the production line, and how did that compare to other games that were being designed at Valley?
At the time, what happened with the industry is we used to get production runs of 10,000 games. And so the amount of games you did per year was less. And as the sales of pinball went down, that time frame really stepped up. So like I said, in the time we did Centaur, Medusa, and Fathom, it was all relatively short time. You know, I don't know, kind of like 6 months maybe? Or, yeah. Where other times you had a longer time to develop it, and you had longer production runs, so you didn't need another game in the queue, you know, right away. So the pressure to get a new game out was a little high at the time. Like I said, there was only 3,500 versus, I don't know, what the Xenon or some of those, didn't they make like 10,000 or whatever? Yeah, something.
Flash Gordon was 10,000.
Flash Gordon, yeah.
11,000.
Any else? One more.
Evan, I've always appreciated your art over the years. It's amazing to me the short period of time that the transition was made from, you know, abstracts and spares into where you could, you know, deploy sort of the full range of your ideas of stickball. How, in that art department, in that environment in Valley over those years, what was the support like for being able to produce, you know, a level of art this year, you know, some of the ball games like that?
Well, Paul Ferris was a great proponent of the four-color process. And so we were quickly moved out of the screen, you know, standard screens, which, you know, could go up to 14 different screens that we'd produce for these things. And this is probably something you've heard before, but when I first came in there and watched Dave Christensen work, a lot of the screens were being cut with this RubyLith, which was a masking material that would, when applied to the silk screen, it would mask off the areas that you didn't want the ink to go through, or that you did want the ink to go through, one or the other. And Dave was, rather than using this material, he was actually inking every single screen. So they were, you know, no matter what they did, and they almost ended up looking like paintings because they were just so stippled and detailed, you know, each little screen. And it was amazing to watch him work every single time. And he was a great inspiration, you know, to me for the screen process. But, you know, like I said, Paul was the guy who always pushed for the four color, and he was a great supporter of any of the sword and sorcery or, you know, fantastic type art. And look where we've come since then. I've had entered the digital world, and we're now putting back glasses together just with style guides, which is, for the number of times they change, it's, you know, back then, once you painted something, it was rarely a change. Well, one of the biggest changes I've ever done in painting in my life was Star Trek, when I had the pajama clothes on and I had to paint over that whole painting. Because the reason I did that was because the portraits all seemed okay. You know, the portraits were approved. Why mess with that? So I just went back and completely whited out their clothes and painted over their clothes. Well, that's the advantage these days with the digital stuff, is whether you do it from scratch or whether you're just using style guide stuff, it changes so much at everyone's whim. And maybe it's a product of that they know that it can be changed, that they keep changing their minds on things. But I'd be losing my mind if I had to make the changes on some of this old artwork that I do now. Probably tomorrow, just so I don't have to keep explaining to everyone, of course, Pirates of the Caribbean, the Stern machine, Pirates of the Caribbean, was all done style guide. It needed to be done quickly. We wanted to get it approved. It's very difficult to get your artwork, painted traditional artwork approved, because there's just always something. Maybe there's an eye off or something like that. They don't like the way the, you know, someone's nose looks. So that was done digitally also, but I've since gone back and painted that whole thing on a 30 by 40 illustration board because I had started it, and it seemed like kind of a waste to let it sit there. So over the course of 2 years, it kind of sat, and then the last 6 months or so, just in my spare time, I painted, and I finally finished it just recently, and I'll probably bring that for everybody to see at the autograph session.
Great. So Kevin's like old style artist as far as what he does and his technique. So it's even for him, it was difficult to kind of go to this modern age because that's what he knows best. And frankly, his artwork is superior. It's terrific.
Yes. We had the same thing with the mechanical end of it. When we laid out a play field, we had big drafting tables, circle templates, and your accuracy of where parts are laid are really, you know, subject to the thickness of your pencil, the lead, and you could be off. Now we're doing everything in SolidWorks 3D modeling, and it's quite a change to go from drafting. And I remember when my wife looked at me and said, "You have an electric eraser? How lazy could you be?" I said, "Well, I do a lot of erasing, I'm telling you." And now it's just a click of the button. But it's interesting. We've gone through the same transition and had to get up with the times and learn to do all this 3D modeling. So, but it is very helpful, you know, from a mechanical end.
Hey, we're going to wrap up here. I want to thank Wally and Kevin for coming here early, and it was a great presentation, guys.